ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder Podcast. This week, I talked to an awesome guest, Shauna Newman. Shauna has been working online in some capacity, one way or the other, since around 2002. So basically, almost as long as the internet has been around. She's a prolific site builder and seller. She's sold many, many sites over the years, but recently has transitioned to more of a building a long-term and hold type site, so brands and those kinds of assets. And in this episode, we cover that transition. So we cover the transition from building to flip and building to sell through to building to hold. We also talk about building traffic outside of Google. So talking about Pinterest and Facebook. And then we also cover a crazy story where she sued Amazon and actually won. So that was really interesting. The whole episode was interesting. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Hey, Shauna, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Good, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, it's 8:30 in the morning there, roughly. We're in sunny Las Vegas,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so we'll see how coherent I am, right?
Hope you've had your coffee.
just one cup, so that's like I said, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Awesome. And we were literally just chatting before we hit record and basically talking about the benefits of the lifestyle of running your own business like this. And after this, you're taking the rest of the day off.
Yeah. I just got back from like an 11-day road trip, but I'm still taking the rest of the day off today.
You deserve it.
Thanks.
So I'm sure like most of our audience are already aware of you in some capacity. You've been in the space for a long time and like you're well known and you give a lot of value. But for people who maybe haven't come across you yet or are not overly familiar, do you just want to give us a little background? I mean, you've been in this space for so long. Just want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started, that kind of stuff, and kind of where that's led you to today.
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing, site building for more than a decade. I got my start just as a freelance writer and kind of doing my own sites on the side. Then as my sites grew, that became my full-time thing. I've usually done just affiliate sites, and in the past, I would say 2.5 years, I've been transitioning more to a hybrid focus with display ads and affiliate.
Awesome. And when you say just affiliate, do you just mean like Amazon affiliate or all kinds of affiliate?
I try to diversify. So I always start with Amazon just because it's the easiest. And as the traffic grows, I seek out like niche specific programs, kind of like if you're in the outdoor space, you're going to want something like maybe Cabela's or REI, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I think you undersold yourself a bit there because you just kind of went through that really quick, but like you've been made online basically since, was it like 2008 or 2009 doing this? So like a long, long time. And
Oh, well, 2008 was when I was doing it full time because that was when I had my last day job that I lost. And so I was on unemployment for like, I don't know, like 3 months. And so that was when I made a big go out of it. But I would say I started before that. I think it was maybe like, I don't know, 2002 or something like that. Anybody who's been in this a long time knows about Shoe Money and John Chow and all those guys with the Made for AdSense sites. So that was really when I started.
Wow. Yeah, I remember the big Shoe Money check, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Empire Flippers was AdSense Flippers at the time. Yeah. So yeah, I've been in it a while.
I think your usual MO across like the last couple of years has been basically to build up these sites to the $2,000 to $3,000 a month level and then flip them, basically. And you've done a ton of that over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think I flipped my first site in 2014, and then it's kind of been basically nonstop since then. However, the last sites I flipped right now were in early to mid 2019, and that was only because I was moving from Vegas to live in Amsterdam, and I lived in the Netherlands for almost 2 full years, and I didn't flip any sites the entire time, mostly because my wife and I were just like traveling and stuff, and so I was just keeping that constant income coming in. And then, of course, you know, COVID and the pandemic hit. So we just kind of were just laying low and letting the money roll in.
Nice. Well, I wanted to ask you, because obviously you've done so many of these flips now. Like, do you have any mm-hmm. tactics for for selling your sites at like the highest price? How do you make sure that you're getting top dollar for them?
Well, I'm really big on, like, I feel like I probably spend a bit more on content than most people for the most part in this industry. You know, I know a lot of people who are like, oh, I never spend more than 2 cents a word, but I'm really big on having content that's quality so that when someone buys a site, they don't have to worry about rewriting it or worry about it getting penalized for crappy content. Yeah. Also, when I sell a site, I like to make sure that I leave some easy wins for the people who are going to buy it so that they know when they buy this site that they're going to be able to increase the income. I know a lot of people are like, why would you do that? Because you're just leaving money on the table.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have a site that doesn't sell either. You know, most of my sites usually sell within a couple of weeks of listing, and that's the way I like for it to be, because I don't want to be holding on to things forever.
Yeah, no, that's good. Do you pull together like a guide of easy wins for the, or do you let them figure that out? Like, it was that the value add, like, here's what I would do, here's my easy win guide, pay me more kind of thing.
No. So usually whenever I start a site, I basically take the time to sit down and explore all of the ways you can monetize the site, even if I know it's something I'm never going to do. So for instance, I never add on like a Shopify site or anything like that, but I always include that because someone could do that. So when I sell a site, I list all of the other monetization options that someone could do. And I also usually include, oh, here's, you know, 100 other keywords I have on my list to write that you could start with right now.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I've had some success doing something similar, but pulled together a document of basically these are the top five things I would do straight away to improve revenue.
Right.
And that could even be small things like I've not turned on Amazon.co.uk or .ca or tiny things, you know. And also list out
And usually I don't build, in the past at least, I haven't built email lists. So that's always been a thing that I've said, oh, you can build an email list. These days though, I do build an email list. So that's not going to be an option for me now. But yeah.
Well, I'm actually really excited to talk to you about email lists later, because you're right. I've never really built one for my sites either. And I want to know a bit more about how you're doing it, how you're doing it and pick your brains a little bit.
Okay.
So when you sell these sites then, I know you sold a lot through like FE International and Empire Flippers, but have you ever gone through the process privately as well? Or has it always been through a broker?
Yeah, I have done some privately. I like to try when I can to maintain a good relationship with people who bought my sites, because you never know what their cash flow situation is. And I've actually had a couple of people who I've sold to privately after selling to them through Empire Flippers. So, and I sold a few really small sites just to random people on the internet. So, but it's the big sales, I try to stay with people I actually know.
What do you find the differences? Like there's pros and cons between using a broker and private, especially if you've done it a ton of times like yourself, it's probably a lot safer. But what's the difference, and what would you kind of, what's your recommendation you go to if someone said to you, hey, I want to sell my site, should I use a broker or not?
Well, I feel like the brokers have obviously a larger Rolodex of interested parties than I do. So that's really the big benefits for them. I know early on, one of my big hangups was I didn't know how to transfer a site. So that's another thing, like Empire Flippers offers that for you. FEI does not. And, you know, that's kind of a hassle. There's also the risk of, oh, is someone going to scam me and, you know, after I transfer my domain and tell escrow that they didn't get the domain and stuff like that. So you have a little bit more protection with those kinds of things. If you use a broker, that's why I tend to, for the larger sales, stick with them or stick with someone that I've worked with before.
Yeah, no, for sure. Although I recently was trying to purchase a site through a broker. I won't mention any names, but I assumed that I would have some protection. And I sent a large sum of money, like $60,000. And then it just never arrived at the bank. Never got there. And then I had to go through the hassle of going to my bank and getting tracking numbers. And turned out the other side's bank had just rejected the payment for some reason. No reason. And I just sat there in the ether for like 3.5 weeks, neither side saying the money's here. And I was like reaching out to them like, what's going on? And I just basically had a it's your problem kind of deal with it attitude, which wasn't great, shall we say. But yeah, I just thought I'd put that in there, that sometimes even using brokers can be not a great experience if something goes wrong.
Okay.
Well, the big part that I want to talk to you today about is your case study sites. I know you blog a lot about this over on SkipBlast, which is a great resource. Mm-hmm. We'll put the link in the show notes. But basically, to give it some context, you've got a portfolio of sites. I think there used to be 4 sites, and then you've sold one. So there's 3 main sites in your case study section now. Mm-hmm. And they bring in around $4,000 to $5,000 a month, depending on like seasonality and things. Right. But each one of them is almost like a kind of like a mini experiment for you, right? And you've got a different angle for each of them.
All right.
So I want to talk through each of them because I think each of them has got some good talking points. So, site number 2 started with prioritizing links over content and then switched to content over links. So, do you want to give us some background on the site, like what it not the niche, but like roughly some overview, and then why did that change? Like, why did you have that change of direction?
So that site was actually an existing site. I think when I started profiling it on SkipBlast, it was 2 or 3 years old. The site had been purely Amazon affiliate. I had gotten it up over $1,000 and then kind of stopped working on it to focus on other things. So it started declining a bit. And I feel like when I started profiling it, it was at around $100 a month. So it had quite the decline in income.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do is I had actually at the time recently gotten to know Anne over at YUYS.com, and she doesn't build links at all, and she's making a massive amount of money. And I was like, how is she doing that? I've got to try this. So I was like, I have to find out for myself if it's better for me to spend my time on links or content, because, you know, I do this mostly by myself. Yeah. So I only have so much time in the day. So I wanted to try doing just a year of nothing but links with no fresh content, see how that goes, then spend the next year doing nothing but content with no links. Now, experiments like this aren't really clean, though, because not only was the site already in existence with content and links, who knows, you know, how much effect those links I built in the first year of profiling it affected it the second year. So what I've been discovering, though, is that the ROI on just the content has been massively better for me compared to doing just links.
Interesting. When you were just building links, what kind of links were you building? Were they to individual pages, or did you have a method that you use for that?
I was targeting buying guides primarily. I did a little bit of Hero as well. At the time, I think I used almost exclusively the No BS Marketplace, which is an Australian agency.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I got any other links from anywhere else, though. But it was guest posts from them.
And mainly built to the individual pages, right?
Right, right.
And how much content did the site have back then? Do you remember, just when you would just do links?
I have no idea. I'm sure I listed it in that first report. I think it has around 200 posts now, maybe 150. At the time, since that was an existing site, it probably only had 50 to 80 posts, honestly.
Right. Okay, interesting. And one thing which I hope we'll get some time to cover later is topic clusters. So I'm assuming there was no topic clusters in that 80 posts. It was just a random mix of posts and you were just building links to them.
Yeah, random stuff, probably terrible internal linking, probably a lot of standalone topics that didn't really affect anything else. So, yeah.
Okay, interesting. And I think the other thing that I think you were trying to do was expand beyond Amazon and Google in for that site as well. Have you managed? How did that look for you?
Yeah, this is the only site I have in that niche. And so I was trying to see, you know, can I get buyers to stop buying from Amazon and buy from these other places that could pay me more money?
Yeah.
I've tested out several things, different programs on Share a Sale and Commission Junction. And this just seems to be one of those niches where people just want to buy from Amazon no matter what. And when I'm testing, you know, multiple programs like that, I always list all of the options for people to buy from so that I can see who they choose.
Yeah.
And it was really not worth my time to try those other programs in the end.
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that. I actually did something very similar on I used to own a decent sized golf site, and you've got a ton of different options for golf products, different affiliate partners with way better commissions and way longer cookie durations. And I even went as far as setting up heat maps on the pages and offered the two different options to see what people would click on, and most would still click on Amazon. I thought, well, take away the choice, I'm just gonna remove the Amazon button and see what happens. And okay, like the commission rate was a lot higher, the window was higher, but due to the overall volume on Amazon, even though the commission rate was way lower, I still made more money with Amazon than I did with some of these pros, which were paying 10% and 30-day window. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I actually built a golf site for my students as a live case study back, I think, in 2016, and I had the same problem. I tried like Rock Bottom Golf, and I think Taylor and Callaway, like they all had direct programs. I tried eBay was honestly the most successful, but even it was not anything compared to Amazon.
I didn't try eBay. I tried the others that you mentioned there. And then one thing, I don't know if you found this with your golf site, and it's kind of influenced, it was one of my first sites, and it's kind of influenced me going forward, was people say that they don't want to target products with low value, but that site was doing like $3,000 a month, and a big chunk of that revenue was coming from people buying golf balls, packs of golf balls. But like,
that was exactly the same for me. It was golf balls.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And ever since, I'm like, I'm so glad people don't target low value products in some niches, because I just cleaned up with golf balls basically.
Well, and I found too with the golf bags, you know, I was trying to sell the ones that were like $300, $400, $500, but they would always buy the $99 one.
Yeah.
Like it was like the little pencil golf bag. And I was like, what are you going to do with this? It's not even that big. But yeah.
No. Did you ever venture into like golf simulators and try going down that route? Because they were crazy prices.
I didn't sell very many of those either.
No, I sort of imagine even more. I was like, nobody's going to buy one of those from my golf review website.
And it's kind of crazy because it's like, it's a really expensive, you know, hobby for people, but clearly they cheap out.
Yeah, I think so. Did you ever go down the route of like digital products around that area? Because this was going back a couple of years ago now, and I was just very much of the mindset back then of Amazon affiliate sites, and I was very blinkered. Like if I still had the site now, I'd look at courses and all kinds of things. Did you ever go down that route?
I'd actually talked with a guy on Upwork who lived, I think, in Argentina about recording some like training drill videos for me, but I never actually followed through with it because I actually hate golf. And so I hated working on that site. So I ended up just selling it and not dealing with it anymore.
Yeah, I've never played golf in my life. I don't know anything about golf, to be honest. I find that with all of my sites, though. I don't build sites in niches I'm passionate about. Like, and I had this conversation with someone this week, and they were like, oh, I really want to build a site in this space. And the space was very small, very niche. I'm like, why? And they said, well, because I like it. I'm like, yeah, but especially if you're outsourcing a lot of the work, like I don't think you need to be in a space you're passionate about.
You know, I actually used to, I would say until about 2016, just target whatever I thought would pay me the most and not worry about whether I liked it or not. I've actually transitioned into trying to only focus on things I actually am at least somewhat interested in learning about.
Yeah.
Just because I find it makes it easier for me to review content when I'm outsourcing it and things like that. It also makes it easier for me to kind of anticipate the types of questions and things that people will be thinking in that niche.
Yeah, I guess, and that feeds into the keyword research then around
product,
like specific knowledge.
Right, yeah.
Okay. No, that I guess that's an interesting counter argument. Okay, so you kind of on that site too, you kind of expanded outside of Amazon a little bit with some of the different affiliate programs. Did you manage to get outside of Google with it, or still very heavily reliant on Google traffic?
Yeah, it was still pretty reliant on Google traffic. I thought it would be a niche that did well on Facebook, but it just never popped for me. So.
No, what's your experience with that? With like, did you build a group? Did you have a group with that, or how was that?
No, I was lazy because I hated the topic, so I just built a Facebook page and just kind of ran some ads and stuff like that to try to get traffic to the site. So.
Oh, interesting. So Facebook ads through to the affiliate content.
Right. Yeah.
How did that work?
I do that quite a lot with my sites to test things. So.
Okay. Interesting. I've only done it a little bit in the past, and I never was able to make it work from an ROI perspective because the commission was just so low. But interesting to hear your experience with that.
I've actually done that when I've been really close to meeting the traffic requirements for MediaVine or AdThrive to get me over that hump to get qualified.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. I've got a site that's literally on the edge now of MediaVine. Yeah. I hadn't thought about.
Yeah. Just
and they're okay with that. Cheap and... I guess they see it broken down in the analytics.
Yeah, report. I've never had a problem with it so far. So
interesting.
But like, I'm doing it when I'm pretty close. Like, it's not like I'm at like 10,000 and sending massive amounts of traffic. So.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All right. Awesome. So I guess the other site then. So site three, like the angle that you took on that was prioritizing content over links. I'm assuming you kind of learned from site two that was the way to go. But this one is interesting because this is the one where you were looking at building a mailing list, monetizing or diversification of monetization. That's a weird saying, diversification of monetization. And alternative traffic growth. So tell us a little bit about like site number three, how that started. Did you build it from scratch? That kind of stuff.
I built it from scratch. It's one of the sites I've had for a while. One of the earlier sites I started. It kind of covers some YMYL stuff because it covers a lot of fitness topics, which kind of skews into health. Okay. During its lifetime that I've had it, it's had a lot of ups and downs, mostly due to me working on it really hard and then neglecting it for a while and then going back to it. But I feel like it's one of those niches where I feel like the potential is probably $20,000 to $30,000 a month.
Yeah.
So basically I realized, I'm an idiot. I need to work on this site more because it's so old and it has a lot of great links. So what I wanted to do was obviously not have to rely on Google. So I was like, I think this will do well on Pinterest, but I'm not 100% sure. So I started hitting Pinterest really hard a few years ago. And these days, anywhere from 15 to 18% of my monthly traffic comes from Pinterest. Then I started hitting Facebook and I'm doing the same thing I told you about where I would just like promote posts on there that I think will pop. And I would say that when I'm promoting those posts, it goes up to maybe 10% of my traffic coming from Facebook, but most of the time it's probably 3 to 5%.
Okay.
I do a lot of content on Facebook where I will profile other brands that are small and then let them know on Facebook so that they can send their audience to me. And that's working really, really well. Okay. I think you also asked about monetization. Is that right?
Just on that brand, strategy you said there. So you tell them that you've got this post on Facebook that mentions them, or you created a piece of content and tell them that you've got, was it both?
I create a piece of content. I've done this on a few of my sites now. So like, let's say I have a coffee site and I'm making a post on coffee drinks, right? And I find that some food blogger has videos out there on how to make a certain type of coffee drink. So I'll make a post on the 5 best videos on YouTube for making barista style coffee drinks at home. I'll put their video in. I'll post that on my Facebook that I've made this post. Then I'll contact them on their Facebook page and say, hey, I made this and you're one of the top 5 people I chose. And so then they'll share it on their Facebook page and then I'll get a bunch of traffic.
Nice, that's awesome. And I'm assuming sometimes you'll even get a backlink out of that as well.
Right, yes. And like one time I had someone share it on all of their social channels too, even like LinkedIn and everything. And I got a massive amount of traffic. I got a bunch of newsletter signups. So it works really well and it's free. So, you know.
That's awesome. Did you do anything special to make the post like amazing? Or is it literally just like just a normal post with some videos in there?
Yeah, it's normal. So when I first started trying this out, I made like this little fancy little badge. Like I spent like probably a half a day designing this. Nobody used them. Nobody would use them. So that was like totally wasted effort. So just low effort, high ROI.
And do you find like there's a sweet spot between the brands that you pick? Like, I guess you would, or would you get a massive brand interested in sharing that? Or is it like, they have to be quite a certain size or a certain profile for that list to work?
I feel like it has to be a brand where the creator is the person you think is running the Facebook page. So it can't be a brand that's too big.
Okay. Awesome. Is there any specific angles that work best? Or are you always using like just the video angle where you pick videos?
I do the video angle because, like I said, I'm all about low effort, high ROI. And I find that I can rank the posts with minimal actual text content on the page if I have the 5 videos on there.
That's awesome. That's really clever. I like that a lot. I'm going to try that.
Maybe we should go back and delete that part because everyone else tries it, right?
I know. Please edit this part out. Joking. One thing which I did do with again, one of my early sites, which I haven't really done since, and I feel like I'm missing a trick with social, like utilizing social traffic and the audience. It was in the grill and barbecue space. And those guys are super passionate within like their own Facebook communities. Like they love showing the food they make and stuff. And I basically was asked them like, could they, for 2 things. One is, would they mind taking photos of themselves with their grills? Because like they're so proud of it. And I had a ton of unique images to use on my site of real people with real grills. And then I would do like surveys in there and ask them like what their favorite flavor would be for X food. And then I would use that then. And I also asked them for recipes. I mean, the recipes were great, but you could stitch a load of them together and say, this is my 5 recipes that I've sourced from X group of real people. And that did really well. And because I was posting in these groups, it got the attention of one of the brands who build smokers. And they were like, hey, can we send you a smoker to review? And I was like, yes. Because by this point, I was looking at all this great food. And then I told them I was in the UK, and they were like, no, we don't ship to the UK. So I didn't get one.
Oh, no.
But I think social groups and social media, like clever, interesting angles like you just mentioned there, I think there's so much opportunity that us traditional like affiliate marketers just overlook, I think, because we're focused eye on the prize of Google traffic.
Right. Yeah, you can actually do the same thing you're talking about with niche forums. So like people who are big into like motorcycles, mountain bikes, things like that, you can kind of get the same stuff going on.
Yeah. Is that a wink you've done that kind of thing as well?
Maybe.
Awesome. Well, one thing which you mentioned there, which I think is interesting and I want to know more about, because I guess one thing which I've overlooked, but I know I probably shouldn't, is the Pinterest angle. And even though I've not done it, I've seen a ton of people talk over the last 12 months about how Pinterest has changed, and some people are really loving life on Pinterest and some people are really hating life on Pinterest. what's your take on Pinterest as a traffic source, especially for these affiliate type sites?
I do think the last 12 to 18 months that the traffic I'm getting from Pinterest has declined some. I've tested it with new sites as well, so starting new accounts, and it still brings in traffic. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of diversifying your traffic. So even though Pinterest isn't giving you as much traffic as it used to, I still think it is a worthwhile investment of your time, just because you could be doing everything right on your site and still get hit by an algorithm update. And then where will you be? You know, so even though it's not as good as it used to be, I would still do it. Another thing that I don't think people actually talk about that much is Reddit. Okay. Reddit can be an amazing source of traffic. But Redditors, if you've never been on there, can be brutal if they think you're spamming it. So I always tell people, start with the Today I Learned subreddit, because they are not as brutal as the other subreddits, and it's an easy way to get traffic.
And how do you, because yeah, I've heard the same thing. How do you structure that content then? Or do you just come in as, hey, look at this great thing, resource I found? Or do you come in as, hey, this is my great resource, I want to share it?
Yeah, no, I don't act like it's mine. You have to act like you just kind of discovered it. Because if you act like it's yours, you're going to get skewered. Another thing that a lot of people don't seem to talk about, or maybe people don't know, is you can edit your Reddit posts. And the link, I think, becomes do follow after 5 upvotes, I believe it is. Okay. So sometimes you can like ask a question, like something like, you know, hey, my dog is doing this. Can anybody tell me if this is normal? You get all these responses, you get these upvotes. Then when you think everyone has left the building, you know, you go back in, you edit your post and put your link in the top.
The old bait and switch.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. And how do you find that traffic converts in terms of like when they get on the site? Or are you just building this traffic for getting them on the mailing list and display ads rather than pure conversion?
Yeah, it really depends on what your link is, which subreddit you're using, things like that. Now, if you're pretty active in a subreddit and you're regularly contributing things and you have really great content on your site, you're going to get more mailing list signups. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be like the display ad increase and things like that that you're looking at. And obviously the backlink.
Yeah, which is important. Do you think that that kind of traffic can be outsourced easily? Like Pinterest management, you can outsource. Content creation, you can outsource. Do you think, is there scope to outsource like Reddit and forum traffic, do you think? Or do you have to be?
I think you probably could, but like I said, I feel like you need someone who is a regular Reddit user to know how Reddit users react to things.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a big lurker on Reddit, so I don't post anything, but I read a lot on there. So I have no idea how it works if you post things on there, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. I actually tried creating a subreddit once for one of my sites as well. And I know I've seen other people do this. I don't find that the ROI is as high, though, compared to just dropping links when it's relevant. I think, though, that could be niche dependent. So it could be just the niches that I've tested it in. So that may be something people want to try.
When you say make your own subreddit, is it hard to make one? I guess it's hard to get the initial engagement in there. Or how does that work?
I think you have to have like a certain amount of karma or something like that to actually start one. And then, of course, you have to make sure one doesn't already exist. Another thing I've done is I found an abandoned subreddit that was relevant to one of my sites, and then you can request to take control of that subreddit. Again, I didn't find the ROI to be all that high for the site I was testing it on, though.
So. No, I like that, though. I'm a big fan of obviously using aged domains, which we'll talk about in a bit, and you can, it's almost like resurrecting them in similar fashion. Okay.
Yeah, and if you take control of a subreddit like that, you can obviously put a link to your site in the sidebar, so then you're getting that link on the subreddit that's been around for years.
If you own the subreddit or control the subreddit, can you put links in the post in the subreddit as well, or can the community still say, we don't like that post?
No, I mean, it's the Wild West. You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
Okay.
And if you have your competitor, you know, putting posts on there, you can moderate them right out.
Nice. Not that you've done that either, obviously.
I mean, maybe I did.
Okay, awesome. So traffic's diversified on that website quite a bit. So sounds like 20, 25%, depending on the month, comes from like social traffic. And then you're trying to diversify that away even further by having your mailing list, which I want to pick your brains about, because again, I'm not setting anything like that up for a long time. What's your go-to set of tools for that? What do you use, MailChimp, or there's a ton of others? And I guess the big one I want to know is does a simple PDF download still work? Like, or are people over that now? I feel like I would never give my email address for like a PDF these days, but maybe because I'm savvy and I'm in the industry.
Okay, so let's start with the last question first. So I find that it's really niche dependent. And it's kind of like you said, how savvy is your audience, right? So for something like, I don't know, an outdoor site, if you're targeting people who maybe are new RVers, you can easily just throw up a checklist for things to pack or whatever and get them to sign up. What I've been doing is there's plenty of people on Etsy who sell like fancy little checklists with like little designs on it and that they're cheap. It saves me time from having to deal with it. I buy those, edit those and put those up for sites like that. For other niches, things like checklists just don't cut it anymore. So let's say you're in the fitness niche. You're going to get better results doing something like a 30-day challenge type of PDF thing that's like basically a small ebook compared to just a checklist of, you know, 12 ways to get fit or something like that. Yeah. Something like I used to have a board games and home game room site that I sold back in 2019. In that niche, strategy guides, how to get better playing foosball, things like that are more likely to get you signups than say, here's the 12 essentials for your home game room or something like that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
So I started out with mailing list using MailChimp just because I didn't really know what I was doing and I didn't want to spend a bunch of money up front with until I had figured things out. After I kind of got my feet wet in that, I transitioned over to ConvertKit, and who I'm really, really happy with. It starts out at $29 a month for the paid plan. And they do a lot of things in ConvertKit actually to kind of help you grow your mailing list. I do a lot of challenges each month. Yeah. You can sell things through your mailing list through them.
Yeah.
They have some great things for segmenting your list, setting up autoresponders, things like that.
Yeah.
So what I like to do is offer whatever type of PDF I think will work for the audience. Then I set up a 10-day autoresponder when they sign up.
Okay.
The first one is just like, thanks for joining. Here's the link to whatever I'm offering for free. The very next day, I send them a follow-up that's on the autoresponder that says, hey, just making sure you downloaded this. Let me know if you didn't get it. Just respond, I got it. If you did, it's crazy how many people actually will respond, I got it. and then I go through and I send out, oh, here's some of our most popular content. Let me know which of these is most interesting to you so that I don't send you things you don't want to read. And that helps me segment people. So say I'm only sending you coffee content and not the things about tea and beer or something like that, you know?
And is it easy to set up that segmentation in ConvertKit?
Oh yeah, they make it super easy. They also have a lot of great things in their support group that are videos that kind of walk you through things. So like I said, I really, really, really like them compared to MailChimp. But I am glad I started out with MailChimp just before spending, you know, the $29 a month.
Yeah.
And then the rest of my autoresponder is just sending out maybe affiliate link offers for some of the private programs that I'm in where they don't mind if I'm emailing them because you can't do that with Amazon links.
Yeah.
And then I send out weekly emails with most recent content based on how the people are segmented with which topics that they want.
So. Awesome. Okay. And do you schedule that in advance? Because I imagine... this game is nowhere near passive. People sell it as a passive income, but right. Writing your emails every week sounds like a bit of a chore, especially when you were traveling around and stuff. Are you able to schedule loads of those in advance?
I don't really schedule that many of them in advance, but I keep them very simple and I use basically the same format. So I'm only basically each email changing out a few things, which is the links to the new content. If there's a new promo by one of the programs that I'm promoting where I want to include that in there, things like that.
Yeah. So. Okay. Awesome. So that goes out then every week. And are you finding that that's a big part of your overall traffic then of people coming back to the site from those emails?
It's not as big as I would like yet, but I can definitely see in Google Analytics that it's growing. So I think I'm clearly on the right track.
Yeah.
It's still kind of an experiment for me in a bit because I'm still working on finding out from each site that I have what the audience best responds to. You know, do they respond more to getting the fresh content updates? Do they respond more to getting the promo updates? Or I've also been testing, here's an old article that we wrote last year that we just updated that you may have missed. You know, and so some sites that works better on.
I guess the big question is, would you do this again for another site? Or is it just a lot of work that is the ROI there, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think the ROI is there if you can get your audience to actually buy things, right?
Yeah.
So I'm always thinking, like, how can I boost the value of my sites when I flip them? Yeah. And just having an email list with 10,000 people doesn't boost your multiple, but having an engaged audience, even if it's only 200 that actually buys from you, does increase that value. So that's really what I'm trying to fine tune. Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth my time. So
that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, I recently purchased a site that came with an active YouTube channel and the viewing, like the engagement numbers were really high, like in comparison to other channels. And a Facebook group where there was a ton of engagement, and I paid a much bigger multiple for that site than I typically would because of those additional assets. Not that it's hard for me to manage those because I'm not a video guy, but I just think, I'm thinking like you, when I come to resell it, as long as I can keep like a baseline engagement there, then I'll get a better multiple when I sell it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'm planning on working on next year is creating info products. I'm going to do info products, maybe a membership type of situation for one of my sites. And I'm going to use the email list to try to sell those things direct. So not only will that give me a totally new revenue stream, but I think that together will even lift the value of the site even more. So
I guess one question which I've always wondered about, like we mentioned earlier, and this may be in a niche that you are knowledgeable and passionate about, but how would you go about creating like a membership course or an informational type product if you are not an expert in the field?
Okay, so one of my sites is a fitness site, obviously. So what I'm planning on doing is I'm going to use Harrow to get quotes from CPTs, right?
Okay.
And maybe some nutritionists. I haven't really worked out everyone I'm going to target yet. So, and I'm going to use their quotes in this thing. And then when I finally get my sales page and everything all set up, I'm going to say featuring contributions from, and I'm going to list all of these professional people in these industries. And that's, okay. I'm hoping that will do the trick. I haven't actually gotten this all done yet, but that's what I'm going to do. And I mean, you could do that for a variety of niches. So like if you had a healthy eating site, maybe you could just use Harrow to get contributions from nutritionists, maybe dietitians.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. A totally different way of using Harrow than the traditional link building method, which is interesting.
I actually use Harrow a lot to create content. So,
any tips you can share there, or how you do is?
Yeah, so Harrow, if you want to use it to get quotes from people, you have to have like a certain ranking on Alexa, which I don't know what year they're living in, but anyways, they don't actually. You don't have to use the website that you say you're getting the quote for as the one that's on your profile. So if your site doesn't have that magical number on Alexa, just put any site that does and you can get it. Just make sure you put to list the query as anonymous because you don't want to get in trouble by the actual site. So,
That makes sense. And don't put in something like Google where clearly not.
Right. Yeah. What I normally do is I just find a site in my niche that's bigger, you know, that actually matches the niche. So,
yeah. Okay. And then do you then, well, I guess, yeah. So you get the quote and usually you get a link back to it then as well.
Yeah. The reason I actually started doing this is, you know, I do a lot of Harrow and multiple times I'll respond to a query and it says it's going on X website. But in reality, the person owns this new site that they're starting that has a DR of 2. And that's what it ends up being published on. And I was like, well, if they're doing that, what's stopping me from getting quotes for my new sites that don't actually qualify to get quotes? So,
interesting. I like that. That's a great idea. Yeah. A little pro tip there for everyone. Shorter's pro
tip. No, I'll probably get abused, but you know.
Awesome. Okay. No, that's good. And then the last site you've got in your case study is site number 4. And I've got a feeling you're probably doing something slightly different for this site because I know you haven't done anything with it for a couple of months, but you want it to be like an authority site, like a brand in the space eventually. What are you doing differently to knowing from day one that's the goal rather than like building a normal site and then trying to transition it into a brand? What are the things you've pre-thought or thought ahead about to to make sure it is a brand from day one?
So quality is my most important thing with this site. So as a result, I've not outsourced any content at all for this site, that which is why it only has like 25 posts in over a year now.
Yeah.
I've planned out how I can take it from nothing to an actual real world business while also maintaining an online presence. It's not going to be your traditional site with, you know, best espresso machines, best milk frothers. It's not going to be that, anything like that. I'm taking a lot of pictures myself, things that I'm doing actually hands-on so that it's more authentic, kind of like the wire cutter, but not exactly. I can actually give you an example of a site that I sold a few years ago where I thought I was going to do the same thing. So I used to have this site I sold in 2019 that was board games and home game room, right? And I had thought, I can take this, make it a brand, and do board game conventions in the real world.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was building out this site with like these strategies. And, you know, if you want to, you know, go play pool, you know, out somewhere, here's some tips you can do for that. But if you want to have it in your home, here's how you can have that, like the pool hall type situation in your home.
Yeah.
All these strategy guides, things like that. Same with the board games. And I was like, okay, we can make these products. We can make these custom dice. You know, we can make these custom holders for people who are playing dominoes. So we'll have products for Shopify. We'll have this real world business. We can even open like board game cafes, blah, blah, blah. So that's the kind of things that I'm planning out for sites like this. These are sites that are probably going to be, you know, 5, 10, 15-year holds for me. These are not your typical affiliate site that you're going to flip.
Okay, interesting. So basically just treat it as a real business from day one.
Right.
Almost with a business plan, like written out.
Yeah, I mean, that is essentially what it is. My background is that I have an MBA, so that's why I am thinking in this type of structure.
So, SWOT analysis and everything that goes along with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
How come you didn't do that with the board business, the board game site? Because I know that's a passion of yours. Like, kind of, I imagine it would have fit your life and your lifestyle and your passions.
What happened with that site is it got up to almost $4,000 a month, and my wife and I were preparing to move to Amsterdam. And so we discussed, should we hold on to this and keep the money coming in?
Yeah.
Or should we just flip it now and do nothing for the next 2 years in the Netherlands? And so that's what we did. I have a 3-year non-compete for that site, which expires next year. I have a site already ready to go. As soon as that non-compete expires, it's just not indexed yet. So I'm jumping right back into that niche immediately when I can.
Right. So it's not.
I have a better brand name now, so it's going to work out better. So.
Well, everything happens for a reason, I believe. So yeah, it sounds like you've. Okay, that's really cool. Are you going to do a case study on that as well, so you can follow along, or is that going to be separate?
I'm not sure yet because, as you know, I just bought that premium expired domain from you guys, and so I want to make that a case study for next year. So we'll see.
Awesome. Okay. No, I'm excited. We literally sent over the keyword research plan to you this week, which I was excited to get done and send over to you. So yeah, I'm excited for that project. The more we looked at the research, we're like, this is actually a great space to be in. I won't say what it is. I don't know if you're going to leave that or not, but I'm excited for this project.
Yeah, me too. I think it could be a really big site. I think it can be a 6-figure flip, and I think it will be a pretty quick timeline for that if I can actually put in the time to grow it once I get it from you guys.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that and seeing the updates on that one, which kind of brings me on nicely to 45 minutes in now, so we've got about 10, 15 minutes left. So I kind of want to get your opinion on age domains. I know we're doing the case study with us, and you've done the case study with, I don't know how you pronounce that word. Is it Tartarus? Is that your project Tartarus?
I think it's Tartarus, but you know, you can, Doug Cunnington calls it Project Tartar Sauce. So, you know, whatever.
What is it? Where did that name come from?
Well, you know, anyone who's read my blog knows that I talk a lot about all the douchebags in our industry and their douchebaggy names for case studies. Like, I think they all have the same little dictionary of astronomy terms and mythology terms, and they just pick one at random. And so I was kind of just poking fun at them and picked one of them as well. So it was a mythology term.
Nice. Okay, yeah. Awesome. Well, that project is built on an oldest domain, so another age right. domain. And I just want to get like some thoughts from you on age domains in general. Like, what are your thoughts on about using them as sites? Obviously, you're pro because
right.
you've done this one and we're doing one together. But like, mm-hmm. yeah, what do you think about them?
I hate the time that it takes to build links. And I also hate when you're doing things like guest posts where you don't know how many months down the line that the person's going to remove the link that you paid for.
Yeah.
So basically I hate the link building, and going with an age domain eliminates that process as long as you pick one that has good links. And not only that, but you rank faster. And so mm-hmm. I don't really see the sense in starting with a fresh domain unless you just can't find the domain you're looking for as an age domain.
Yeah, that's the only one of the only downsides is like the not being able to pick the brand name. Like you have to go right. with whatever yeah. someone else has picked in the past.
Yeah, and like the Project Tartarus site is an acronym, and so I had to get really creative to make it work with the niche that I wanted to go into. So it can be pretty time consuming. And of course, the other possible downside of age domains is you never really know if it's going to work or not. It doesn't matter how great the links are. You can still have it not work. So that's yeah. always a risk, which is honestly why I tell people who are new, don't start with an age domain.
Yeah, we found that. And it's not that they don't work totally. It's that they just behave right. like a fresh domain. So like you've paid the money right. for an expired domain, and then it's kind of might as well have just started with a new one. And yeah. We found that with a couple. It's definitely a one of the risks there. And I think you can minimize that risk by like just doing a crazy good job of the vetting process, but it's still mm-hmm. one of those risks which you can't get rid of.
Yeah.
Okay. And where do you normally source them? So I know obviously you bought one from Otis and you bought one from us.
Mm-hmm. I bought some also from SERP Names, but those are the only three.
So you've never bought one from auction, or you've never gone down that whole rabbit hole?
Well, you know, years ago when PBNs were all the rage, I had a PBN of my own that was over 200 sites. And so I'd bought a lot of things from GoDaddy Auctions, NameJet, and there was one other big Dropcatch, I think, is the other one. Yeah. So I have experience buying domains that way.
Yeah.
I don't like the time that it takes watching the auctions. I think DomCop is the software I use to kind of see all of them on the same page. Like that's just too kind of time consuming for me today. That's why I use the brokers.
Okay. Interesting. I guess that's a story for another time, but like managing a PBN of 200 plus sites, that was crazy.
Yeah. It was difficult.
Did that get picked up by Google, or what happened to that network?
A few of them every so often would get nuked, but generally speaking, overall, most of it stayed intact. Over time, as I was flipping the sites and the people didn't want the links left on the PBN, I didn't have any need for them because I was trying to buy PBNs that were niche relevant.
Yeah.
That's why I had so many sites in it. Yeah. So I just let a lot of them expire. I still have a few of them actually that are pretty good quality.
Okay. Awesome. So have you ever tried, there's a big, I think a lot of people talking at the moment about like using expired domains or age domains as a 301 redirect strategy. Have you tried that yourself?
Yeah, I've done a lot of testing like that. Normally when I have a domain that when I build a site on it and it's like a dud, I will then 301 it and get better results. I'll 301 it to an existing site. The things I've not done a lot of are just buying it and immediately 301ing it to a site. I've done a few like that. And for me, the results have just been kind of so-so. I still think the best results are building a site in the same niche on that domain.
Interesting. When you did those redirects, were you just straight to the homepage, or did you do anything specific when you were doing those redirects?
I've tested the homepage. I've tested going to like a hub page or a category page, and I've tested just pointing it at like an acquisition page.
Interesting. Yeah, we've been doing quite a lot of that over the last 12 months, and we've had some like stellar results with doing that. And we do it to the acquisition page, and then the acquisition mm-hmm. page contains like almost like a skyscraper piece on that like mm-hmm. silo or that category,
right.
and internally links through to all of the content in there. And then we just push the redirect domain to that category or that silo page, whatever you want to call it, acquisition page. Mm-hmm. and one of the best sites we've built this year. Phenomenal growth. It's over 1 million visitors a month now. I wish it was my site, but it's a client site. And site's only 11 months old and it's getting over 1 million visits. And that we've done that process six times. So six redirects in there. So I'm always interested to hear other people's opinions on how it's worked for them versus what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's interesting because I have one site that I've had probably since 2015. And it was earning 500 a month consistently for years. And so I started 301ing age domains at it because I was like, I wonder how many age domains I can redirect to this before it tanks. The answer was six. So it's funny that you have one that's six that's doing 1 million because I tanked that site. It made like $20 last month.
Interesting, because there's a great example of another site in the space that's done this about 200 times. It's in the financial sector. Wow. It's called iVisa.com if you want to go and check it out. And they do a mixture.
I've seen that site before. Is it personal finance or is it like living
abroad? It's finance, yeah.
Okay.
And they do a mixture of redirecting these pages to existing content, to an acquisition page or to a category page. And I was blown away. Somebody else told me about that site. They were like, have a look at this site that's done it so many more times. I was like, wow.
And so the ones that I've had where I've built the site on it and it didn't really pop the way I wanted, but then I've 301'd everything. When I've done that every time, usually it's resulted in the existing site doubling income.
Interesting.
That. But every time though, that 301 included all the new content I created for the age domain.
And when you did that, was it 301 to a fresh domain or to another age domain?
It was an existing domain that I'd had for a couple of years every time. So
yeah. Okay. Interesting. One thing, and this may be a bit a technical question. We're always a little bit hesitant when we do redirects to make sure that the domain that you're redirecting it into is strong enough to absorb the redirect. And basically what we mean by that is we don't want the primary anchor text to be messed up.
Right.
Have you ever done any testing around that, or do you ever notice anything? Do you ever take that into consideration?
That honestly, anchor text isn't really something I ever worry about.
Okay, interesting.
So, yeah, I feel like it's one of those things that's like a low ROI thing for me, so I don't really worry about it.
Yeah. Maybe I should take it off my list then, because it's one of the things I definitely look at all the time. Okay, awesome. I think this is a question that I get asked quite a lot, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, is when you're building sites on expired domains, do you think investors or people buying the sites are put off that they're built on an age domain?
I think it's really going to depend on the actual domain. Like there was that site that we talked about recently that was for sale at Motion Invest. I think it was a restaurant domain or something like that. And they built a popcorn site on it. Nobody wants to buy that. No. I feel like though, if the age domain is niche relevant and it isn't obviously something like a restaurant and you're putting something wacky on it, then I don't think investors are really going to care.
Yeah, I agree. I've sold a couple of expired domains and people don't seem to care as long as it's done right. I think the example we were looking at is even worse than that. It was a popcorn website on a domain that used to be about sharks.
That's what it was.
Where's sharks. The crossover there?
Well, I also think too, if you can show, I've had this domain live and earning for over a year.
Yeah.
Why would there be a risk?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Awesome. That kind of covers what I wanted to talk to you about on the age domain front things. And I know we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I don't know if you've got time to go into the whole. Okay, I noticed when I was looking at your site that you sued Amazon in 2015. What happened? How did that work?
So in 2014, I think it was 2014, maybe it was 2015. They closed down my account 2 days before Black Friday.
Oh.
And I had already earned something like $17,000 that month. So they said they were keeping all of that money plus what I had earned the previous month. And I was like hell you are, because I knew I had done nothing wrong. What I had been doing at the time, it was very profitable because the commission rate was still, you know, you get up to 8.5% at the time.
Yeah.
I was running Google ads to my buying guides. So I had a hunting website at the time. I had a crossbow buying guide. I was promoting all crossbows that were $300 and up.
Yeah.
I was making a ton of money just sending people to that buying guide and having people buy.
Yeah.
So I'd been doing this probably for the entire year and it had been no problem. It's not against the rules for Amazon, but clearly they didn't like it. And they used to have a forum at the time. I don't know if they still do through Amazon Associates. And the same day that my account got closed, two other people had posted that they're the guy closed for the same reason.
Right.
So they give me the reason of making that inaccurate, broad or claims or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to fight this. Unfortunately, I was living in Vegas at the time, like I am now. And the limit for suing them in small claims court was $10,000. So I couldn't get back everything that they owe me. But I was like, ah, I'm going to do it. So we took Amazon to court here in small claims court. They actually are incorporated here as well as Seattle because they have a big distribution center here in Vegas. So I had to pay the cops to go to the Amazon office here to serve them the notice. Then we got a court date. And you know, I was willing to settle out of court just because I don't like driving the traffic here in Vegas and I had to go downtown for it. They sent a paralegal, not even like a real lawyer, down from Seattle. She got there early and flirted with everyone in the courtroom to try to win them over. She tried telling the judge that Amazon was such a great company to work for. There's no way they would do anything like this, blah, blah, blah. So I got really lucky, though, because the judge actually wanted to take the time to learn about this industry, how Amazon worked and everything. Amazon could provide zero screenshots of the infractions that they were accusing me of.
Yeah.
Come to find out, the things that they had to submit said that they just didn't like the look of my site. They thought it looked spammy, so they wanted to close the account. And so the judge said, that's not a valid reason based on your operating agreement. So they had to pay me the $10,000 plus all court costs.
Nice. That's
so
cool.
They tried to actually get us to sign an NDA before they paid us also so that we wouldn't tell anyone.
Right.
And we're like, you can't do that. So then they just sent us the check.
Did you get your account back as well or no account back?
I didn't reopen that account based on the judge's ruling. I could have, but the day after they closed my account, I opened five LLCs here in Nevada with five different addresses from five different IP addresses and five different bank accounts. And so I split all my sites between those and started over immediately the next day. So I still have, I think, four of those right now. So
awesome. That's such a cool story.
I think the Empire Flipper guys ended up suing them once as well for the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, hats off to you. Props to you. That's going after what was owed to you. That's great. And it's great to hear you won as well.
Yeah. And after we won was when they stopped closing people's accounts immediately and giving people 5 days to fix their issues.
So basically, thank you, Shauna, for helping us with our Amazon accounts if we ever do anything
you're
wrong.
Welcome, everyone.
Awesome. No, that's great. This has been great. I really enjoyed our chat today. I know we kind of talked before coming on here about like you've got quite a lot of courses that you offer. And you said you is it like a challenge that you're going to get another six done potentially by the end of the year?
Yeah, like I started this crazy thing this year of challenging myself. One of those things was actually going on podcasts because I had never gone on any before this year. But the other one was to put out 12 courses, so the equivalent of one a month. But I had neglected to consider that I would be using a closet for my recording studio here in Vegas, and there's no air conditioning vent in there. So like the entire summer, I couldn't record any courses. So I'm a little behind, but I still have six more that I'm definitely committed to getting out. So.
Have you given yourself like a forfeit? If you don't do them, then X?
No. I'm going to do them. I'm hoping I can get them all done by December 31st. But if I can't, I'll just go into January to do them. But I will get them done.
Do you know what the titles are? Just so if anyone's listening is interested.
I've had some requests for competitive analysis for both just assessing the SERPs as well as keyword researching just actual competitors. So that one's that one's probably the next one I'm going to do. I'm not 100% sure. I've had some requests on writing content and structuring blog posts and stuff like that. So that one will probably be one I'll do as well. I have one on doing a content audit on the list. And I don't remember what else I have. So. Yeah.
Awesome. And those will be going for sale on your site, SkipBlast, right?
Yeah, I actually host the courses through Teachable on a different domain, digitalauthorityacademy.com, but I have the link also on SkipBlast. So.
Cool. Awesome. And if people wanted to reach out to you after this, are you available for people to contact you or just like, hey, I've got my blog, go look and leave me alone?
Yeah, no. So yeah, people can contact me through SkipBlast, Shauna@SkipBlast.com, or just, you know, go through my old posts and leave a random comment like people do. My Twitter DMs are also open. So that's just @ShaunaNewman. So yeah.
Awesome. Great. Shauna, this has been awesome. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. I found it really interesting, and I think our audience will as well.
Yeah, it was a fun interview. Thanks.
Awesome. Cheers, Shauna. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.